Okay. Thanks for coming to my talk. I've been told to make this as pedagogical as possible, so I'll go really slowly, but that probably means I won't get to discussing soft modes and asymptotic symmetries at the end, but we can discuss that afterwards if you guys want. Okay, so without further ado, let me start by introducing celestial holography. And since I come from an ADS-CFT background, and I guess since also because ADS-CFT is maybe better known, I'm gonna do that by first talking about ADS-CFT. So as we all know, or most of us know, ADS-CFT is this statement of a duality between a gravitational theory and an ADS d plus one spacetime and a conformal field theory in one lower dimension. So in this picture, the ADS spacetime is falling in the middle of the cylinder, while the CFT lives on the surface of the cylinder. Now, this duality is partly motivated by a comparison of symmetries. For example, the isometries of the ADS spacetime are the same as the conformal symmetries of the CFT. And through this duality, one of the things that we are able to study really well is entanglement entropy and something called subregion duality. Now, when let's say we want to calculate this entanglement entropy of this region R on the boundary, then we have this quite famous formula known as the RT formula, which says that all we need to do is calculate in the bulk the generalized entropy of a region R. So this region R is this spatial region in the bulk. And the RT formula says that this generalized entropy is going to be the same as the entanglement entropy of the little region R on the boundary. Now, kind of motivated by this, we also have this notion of subregion duality, which says that not only is the entire ADS spacetime dual to the entire CFT, but if we just want to know about the state on this capital R, then that's recoverable from the CFT state on this little r region on the boundary. Or if you want to think about causal developments, if you have access to the causal development of this spatial slice on the boundary, so this entire diamond on the surface of the cylinder, then you'll have access to everything in the causal development of this partial spatial slice in the bulk as well. So these ideas are quite well studied in ADS-CFT, but they're not quite that well, or they're not really studied at all in celestial holography yet.
Does this statement mean that you could put any sort of defect on, in this diamond, the boundary, to never push out of the diamond? So you're supposed to.
Well, I mean, if so.
Look at the Wilson line in the boundary diamond. The minimal surface always be inside the.
Yeah, that should be true, yeah. So you can calculate Wilson lines with just these surfaces in the bulk, which should stay inside your causal development of the capital R. Okay, so now let me talk about celestial holography. Just like in ADS-CFT, we have this identification of symmetries. So on the left-hand side, we have Minkowski spacetime, and it has Lorentz symmetry. On the right-hand side, we have a celestial CFT in two dimensions, and it has a conformal symmetry, which is identified with this Lorentz symmetry. I should say that, in case you're not familiar with this already, this celestial CFT lives on this two-sphere, which is reached by going out along this null cone from the origin. Now, as I was saying earlier, these questions of entanglement and subregion duality aren't quite that well studied, or they're not studied at all in celestial holography yet. So in particular, we can ask a question like, what is, or how do you describe the entanglement of a region R that's, say, this subregion of future null infinity, the space-time entanglement? So you have some quantum fields fluctuating in your bulk. These evolve to some state at future null infinity. And we want to know about the entanglement entropy if we restrict to this part of future null infinity. So we don't know what the answer to that yet. that is yet, but I'll try to answer the question during this talk. And another question we want to ask is maybe, or what is the CFT dual to, say, the causal development of this region? So if instead of just considering this surface on future null infinity, you can push that back by time evolution, and you cover this nullness space-time inside the bulk. And the question we want to ask is, can we describe that Milnes spacetime in some nice way from the perspective of the CFT side? Okay, so that's a brief introduction to what I'm going to talk about. But before getting carried away with talking about entanglement and stuff, let me try to review celestial holography from the point of view of these correlation functions. And okay, maybe I should go back to ADS-CFT and talk about the analogous problem here. So in ADS-CFT, we know how to calculate these correlation functions. In the CFT through a bulk calculation, which looks something like this. You have these points on the boundary where you're inserting the operators. And from these operators, you propagate some excitations into the bulk. And essentially, the idea is you connect this to some Feynman diagram in the bulk. And the resulting diagram is known as a Witten diagram. And that's essentially how you calculate these correlations in ADS-CFT. Now, in celestial holography, we try to do something very similar, where to calculate this correlation function in the celestial CFT, we again propagate into the bulk from these points on the boundary where the operators live. And we connect these propagators with a Feynman diagram. So that's how you calculate correlation functions in ADS-CFT and celestial holography. And in both cases, I guess I need to tell you a bit more about what these squiggly lines going into the bulk mean. So let me, okay, so this was ADS-CFT, and now I'm gonna continue talking about this case. So when I draw this squiggly line into the bulk, that means I have some source, I guess, that I've taken to the boundary of the spacetime. And from this source, I'm creating an excitation, which corresponds to some solution of a bulk field, which I'll call A delta. And what we want is for this solution to satisfy the same transformation laws that is satisfied by the CFT operator that sourced it. In particular, this CFT operator should transform nicely under a dilation in the CFT. And correspondingly, or corresponding to that dilation in the spacetime, corresponding to this dilation in the spacetime, we have a Lorentz boost in the direction of this O. So we want this A delta to transform in some nice way under this Lorentz boost.
Your source is going to be smeared along the generator of sky, or it's really going to be at the light cone mirrored?
It's going to be at the light cone.
And for any delta, it still is just there? And that delta is the celestial weight, or is it like a Corallian weight?
It's like a, I'm not sure what you mean by a Corallian weight, but basically it's
like under translation, that operator delta was a delta plus one, and that point moves, or no?
Like, do you mean under translation in which direction?
So if I translate, say, along the generator of Scry, I would have thought that if I wanted to be, like, if delta is the normal conformal dimension we use, that you'd want to basically have that source smeared so that you can just have, like, delta goes to delta plus.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you can smear it in delta, and that will create some profile, I guess, along Scry. But if we just focused like on a single delta, that should be, like, I'm gonna view that as propagating from just Scry.
So if I wanted to say I have a bulk scalar field and I wanna create like the principal series, like weight, like delta is 1 plus I lambda 1 versus 1 plus I lambda 2, what distinguishes those two sources?
How do you distinguish between?
So, for example, what I would have thought I would do, and this isn't necessarily saying that you're wrong, is that I would have said that, okay, so I take my scalar field in the bulk, I like push it out to null infinity, and then if I wanted to prepare like a wave packet that's like a momentum, I could say it, I smear with the Fourier transform along Scry. If I wanted to prepare one of these, I smear with the profile in U. So it really has support along the full null generator, I would have thought, rather than just at the like one point.
Right, so I guess the you're asking if I take this point and move it to other points in Scry, is that zero?
No, maybe what I'm asking is, like, I only have one operator. Like, if I had only one bulk field, I should only have one operator, like, near that I can take to null infinity, right? So, like, I create this continuous spectrum of delta by basically changing, like, the profile along the U generator that I'm using to prepare the state.
So in terms of you asking, I think what basically Sabrina's asking is whether, like in your plot, it looks like your operator is inserted at a fixed retarded time, U.
Yeah.
But to create an operator of fixed dimension delta, you need to smear integrate over all U. Is that what you
That's mean? My question, so I don't know.
Okay, so like if I take this point to null infinity, it's going to have a non-trivial profile across null infinity. I'm only drawing it this way because later, like I want to talk about these slices, and it's easier to
in each of those lessons. So if you're doing like an extrapolate dictionary story, like slice by slice, probably De Boer and Solodukin, I could see where you want to somehow think of the sources there. But I think like Massimo and Charlotte would even have like operators smeared along the like. I thought the source might have had co-dimension one support, not co-dimension two support, but that's my question, but we'll get back.
Okay. Yeah, maybe it's just a question of how I'm drawing this. Like, I'm only drawing it as localized to this point because I want to think of this as sort of just an extension of the bulk-to-boundary propagator along a hyperbolic.
So say the bulk-to-boundary propagator is like a bulk-to-bulk propagator then pushed to the boundary. You should only have one bulk field for every, like, I mean, so, like, what's the phi delta? I think I have just one phi, and that delta is because I have another direction I've smeared, right? So, other, like, do you have, for, like, the, say, the photon? You just have one photon field that you're taking out to the boundary. You don't have any delta, you know.
Like, are you asking, do I have multiple delta?
Like, so, in the, okay, so, let's say free scalar massless. You have O delta on the boundary. What distinguishes, and it, that's supposed to be like the in the bulk to bulk propagator version of the story that you're then taking one to the boundary. Like, what's the field? What's like phi delta versus like phi that I'm used to in the scalar?
Phi is like phi delta integrated over delta.
Yeah. So right. So it's integrated, smeared in some direction, right?
Sure. It's smeared in delta, but okay, maybe it's just. For some reason, I like to always, regardless of what this delta is, I like to put that point right there. Okay? Okay. Right, so I was just saying that this A delta is an eigenfunction of boosts, or I guess A boost in this towards this point. Oops, with eigen value delta. So basically what I'm saying is that this correlation function is calculated by this scattering. of these.
I think it's also primary for the raising operator.
It is para.
It's also, I assume it's also primary for the lowering. It's also manipulated by the lowering operator. You should represent a point on a sphere.
Yep.
To choose the point, I guess there is also another vision. I mean, that would be not a delta of z, I assume.
Sorry,
there would be a delta of z, where z is the point we want to put the operator, I assume.
Yeah, exactly. So okay, let me write this guy in full. Okay.
Yeah, because otherwise, you would want a Casimir, right? Not an even body. Not one of those generators.
Okay, maybe let me write down the full set of these guys, and maybe that will answer your question. So to choose these delta, what we want is for these this type of scattering amplitudes to be equivalent to the regular type of scattering amplitudes that we consider in QFT, which involve plane waves. So there, we're looking at these plane waves, right? And what we want is for this to be the same as the set of these what are called conformal primary wave functions. And in order for that to be true, I need these deltas to lie on the principal series, as Sabrina was saying. Where this lambda is real. And of course, these guys also depend on a point on celestial space where the propagator is originating from.
Sorry, because I just so Anna can help translate, maybe. Like, I still think your source is smeared along scry.
Would you say that given?
Only because she has a one paper where there's a continuous set of fields, and you have another one where you're viewing these guys as like.
But this is, I think, Vincent is just saying the usual story.
No, but it's not, because the question is, if you look at, like, he's going to talk about causal regions, and if, like, operators at u equals zero versus it's at any value of u, that's a very different question.
Okay, well, like, right now you're just reviewing the standard.
It's not standard. That's not standard. Okay, yeah.
It's just maybe the picture that might be confusing.
Is I'm still thinking about the standard thing. It just reminds me, these are representations of residual C, right?
Is it though?
You're looking for representations of residual C, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Not residual.
Not what?
Not residual.
I'm not sure.
We're staying in 1,3 signatures, so we're actually looking at Lorenz. We're not doing, like, a complex.
So it's essential. So there are 6 generators.
Yeah. No, there should be. I think there should be 10, and that's why I'm confused.
No, forget translations. Forget translations. There is Lorenz. There is not one that I saw. So.
That's great.
That's so just there are 2 Casimirs. I'm just trying to remember which. So you have a single label delta, and I'm trying to remember what I mean. If we got a member representation setting 2 labels, like a continuous one and a discrete one, like a delta and a k.
Yes, the spin is the spin of the book.
Ah, okay. Sorry, didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay.
I feel bad. I'm sorry, Vincent. I thought I really do think that source is weird, but.
Okay. Like, okay. Do you want me to just, I don't know,
yeah, just
spread
like,
out
like,
this thing?
Yeah. No, not that way. No.
Okay, whatever. Okay, right, where was I? I was saying that these guys are also labeled by these W's. Which are points on my celestial space.
And that's because the representation, these principal series representations are written as functions on CP1, right?
Sorry, could you say that again?
So I will try to remind myself.
Okay.
Maybe one small comment is that these are not principal series representations, right?
Thank you. Okay, so.
Yeah, that's the highest weight. Yeah. Anyway. They are highest weight representations. They are killed by the L1. Yeah.
And the
particular, like some linear combination of the boost and the rotation.
And L1 unitary?
These representations are unitary. I think. Well, Sabrina.
Well, now you're gonna have to talk to me.
I thought that the unitary positions are just true.
Yeah, but what is your unitary product? What's your unitary product? Right, that's the question.
Is that I don't know because
there's a Hilbert space there.
No, principal series, they don't have a highest weight state. These ones are constructed such that they are annihilated by the corresponding L1 and L1,
which is coming from level group.
L1 and L1 mark.
Right.
Sorry, L.
I mean, that too.
Yeah.
Okay. Just didn't know this was unitary. This is what, I thought you were describing Hilbert space. So I'm super confused.
Let's go to momentum space instead of delta.
I mean, the thing on top is the Hilbert space. Is there even a product, I assume, on the wave function? There's a span of e to the ikx.
Mm-hmm.
There's an even product there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Klein-Gordon inner product.
Right.
Yeah.
And is this sort of, are the generators of S2C mission, anti-mission with the division and product? Question. I don't know. I'm sorry.
They're Hermitian with respect to the one you're using in the bulk. So yeah, but they're not the standard 2D.
Yeah.
Okay.
What?
Should
we like maybe take 10 minutes and let Vincent maybe like proceed and then ask the question?
But this is a group meeting.
It's a group meeting. So yeah. A seminar.
I think there's a crucial difference that I hope it's clear. The purpose of a group meeting is to for us to be able to help,
and this is recorded so
which requires understanding.
No, it's great. I haven't been to these ones.
Right,
I take it.
We
organize them.
I can, but I'm not sure it's really insightful. I'll relate it to the stuff over there.
Don't worry about
I'm going to relate it to the squiggly lines in ADS CFT, so.
No. Those are the functions. How do they look? Function of. There's nothing.
I mean, I can.
Write down the conformal primary wave functions, and I. Yes, right? Because Enrico was asking me what they are.
Oh, okay.
This is why I was saying that maybe we should wait for Vincent to maybe proceed for a bit and then.
Okay. I will write it down in just a moment, if I don't remind me again. Okay. Right, so we want this to be true, so okay, in fact, I'm going to separate these into positive and negative frequency solutions. And I should say that there's actually two sets of these conformal primary wave functions labeled by the sign plus minus, and those correspond to whether you have positive or negative frequency modes. Okay. Right, so the idea now is that I can expand my field. In terms of these guys,
something about your fighting, go on. Part of my confusion is that this looks really like the decomposition of things into spherical principal series representations of a such a series. So, it's really.
Okay.
not highest weight representation.
Sure, but the highest weight condition is literally the fact that these are ISO2, and the little group is just an SO2. If that helps you at all, does that help you? Like the additional annihilation of the highest weight is because the massless states have helicity reps.
This is skip, right?
Well, I don't know what he's able to.
The form of the value function to distinguish why this is not the usual thing. Because otherwise, I mean, if it would be just 1 over power rho of 1 plus I lambda.
I mean, and also emphasize that there's an x dependence in that A, right? Like, this is, there's a bulk.
Yeah, what is the x? Is
the
it
x
in
is
the,
an A.
The big A.
Yeah.
And is A of x is a scalar field?
As I'm writing it right now, yes, it's a scalar field. It will. I can turn it into a Maxwell field by just.
It's okay.
Well, I'm gonna do it anyway later. So.
So how do these A look like?
Right. So these A's.
And SO2C as the usual differential operators on W and W.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that's.
So if you really want to know what these A's look like, they are.
And I'm sorry, I'm not orthogonal to your talk. We can stay here for a long time.
Okay, how much longer after?
Okay, so yeah, I care what Dominic thinks about me, so as long as he wants to be here. But I guess nominally, we'll just in half an hour, we'll let the people who don't enjoy this.
Okay. right, so for a scalar field, this is. Okay, let me write a more general form of this first. It's sort of like an extension of the bulk to boundary propagator that you usually use in ADS-CFT, except you kind of promote this coordinate in a clever way so that it can run through the entirety of Minkowski spacetime. And for a scalar field, this guy looks like. And this p hat,
it's a bilinear.
It's like a null vector that points in the direction of
the bar.
I mean, that's true, but that's not why.
Okay. So this is a matrix, which matrix is like 1 W, W bar, W bar.
Yes. He's literally just writing it out for you, and then he's like, up to linear order in W, W bar. Because that makes sense.
Because this,
yeah.
This is the basis of the spherical series representation.
you have an X in your spherical series representation?
Yes.
Right, so.
I mean, this is
okay.
So there is something called the spherical vector, the spherical series representation, and then you can atom it to the.
Should be your X.
So that's what it looks like, but I'm not sure what we learned from this part, apart from the fact that it's kind of just an extension of the ADS-CFT bulk to boundary propagator. And this fact will actually hold if you want to consider other fields other than scalar. So actually for the field that I'm going to talk about, or I wanted to talk about, was a Maxwell field. So what happens there is you stick in here some polarization vector, and this K gets these indices. It has a space-time index, and it also has this index in celestial space. So this guy has a space-time index, and correspondingly, these creation or annihilation operators also have this index A, which is contracted into it. So there's an A there. And there's an A there as well. Okay. Right, so this part of the formula doesn't really hold anymore, but you still have the fact that it's an extension of the ADS-CFT bulk to boundary propagator. And
I'm confused where e to the ikx went. Are we saying that the A delta plus 1 minus R expanded into the ikx groups, or?
Yeah, so what I'm saying here is that each of these guys can be expanded in terms of these guys up to a pure gauge part. And each of these guys can also be expanded in terms of these guys up to a pure gauge part.
So K turned into Q hat and the energy turned into delta.
Okay. Right, so let me get rid of this to make space. And let me try to motivate or explain this formula a bit more. And I'm going to do this by slicing up my Minkowski spacetime. Okay, I'm just going to draw a 2D picture because the 3D picture will just turn out to be really confusing. So in this Milne spacetime, I'm going to slice it up like this. I'm going to do the same thing down here. And in this intermediate region, I have slices like this. I'm just going to draw maybe the 3D picture for just one of the slices in each case. OK, so this, if I look at one of the slices up here, it basically looks like a disk. Like that, and the same thing down here. Whereas these slices are like tubes. And the point is that these slices are hyperbolic, whereas these slices are de Sitter. And now if we just want to restrict to this hyperbolic slice and solve for our field. Like, if we pretended our field just lived on this, and we solve for its equations of motion, then naturally we can just use the bulk to boundary propagator of ADS CFT. And so what this formula is doing is kind of taking this intuition and taking this, or it's extending this in a clever way so that this point can now go over entirety of Minkowski spacetime. So actually building off of this, what I want to say is that this kind of argument where you or dimensionally reduce to these slices and then look at the theory restricted to these slices, it kind of offers this natural division of Minkowski spacetime into three regions. In particular, up here, we have this region covered or foliated by hyperbolic slices. The same down here, and we have this intermediate region foliated by De Sitter. So when...
Okay, can I just ask a very quick question?
Yeah.
So here you got an integral of a lambda and the square of W. So this means that this space of states has been decomposed into eigenspaces of this lambda, and then this L shu of W.
So these what of W?
It's like wave functions now are wave functions on CP1, right? Which depend on this parameter lambda. Mm-hmm. And so they live in a spherical series representation, not in the highest weight representation. So you did this, by doing this, you did expand this Hilbert space of scattering states into spherical series representations of the CQC, manifestly. Because you have functions of, for each lambda, functions of W with a Hanganer product, and with the SLQC acting as SLQC on W. That is pretty much by definition spherical series representations.
And yet we can also show it's annihilated by like the L1 and L1 bar. So this debate is plugged, Anna and I, for like.
No, the Hilbert space. I made a statement. You can make a different statement.
Yeah, I'm making a different statement.
But there is a statement that this you just want the scattering space, Hilbert space, as a direct sum, direct integral of spherical series representations. I think. As far as I can see, I'm really wrong.
Okay, I don't know many of those words, but sure.
The scale is very common.
Imagine presenting this at Rutgers with Greg Moore in the audience and getting crazy. Okay, turn. This is, fun. So, this is something Anna and I can talk to.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it later.
Yeah.
So we can just.
Okay.
I think it's relevant to what you're drawing in the picture because additional multiple functions on H3+ are precisely the sort of direct integral.
Okay.
So this essentially this presents a Hilbert space as functions on H3+.
Okay. Right. So where was I? I was saying that this gives kind of a natural decomposition of Minkowski spacetime into these three regions. And so one might wonder. One might wonder whether I can apply this argument to each of these regions separately. And hypothesize that maybe each of these regions has its own CFT dual. Now, if this is true, we can then ask, how do these CFTs join? to give me a celestial CFT that describes the full space-time. And obviously, these CFTs must interact in some way. Otherwise, they would just factorize, and you just get different theories that are not connected to each other. So you need these interactions.
In order to draw these two coordinate lines, you picked a point in space-time.
Yep.
Okay. I'm sorry, okay?
Yep.
You know, okay, understand.
Okay. So, right, you need these interactions because you want to describe excitations, which are exchanged between the different regions. So if I have some excitation in Q, I want it to be able to propagate into P. And you also need these excitations to describe entanglement. And for the rest of the talk, this is the aspect that we'll focus on in the remaining 15 minutes. Okay, so I'm going to first take a step back from the celestial CFT discussion and talk about just space-time entanglement so that we know, at least from the space-time point of view, what it means for this region R to be entangled with the other or the other stuff in the Minkowski vacuum. Now, one of the reasons for choosing to look at Maxwell theory is because Maxwell theory is conformal. And there's actually a very nice strategy to think about what various vacua mean with respect to each other in conformal field theories. And that's to map everything to an Einstein static universe. That's just a fancy name for a geometry that is R, which is time, times S3.
It's also been obnoxious if a scalar is also conformal.
Sorry, say that again.
It's also been obnoxious if a scalar is also conformal.
A free scalar is also.
He just wants you to not use the enum.
Oh.
No. I mean, you stressed Maxwell, but you don't need Maxwell
to have a conformal invariant, right? A free scalar is conformal.
Well, you need it to be minimally coupled, or sorry, not, you need it to be conformally coupled, though.
Okay.
And I'd rather not.
Okay.
Whereas, like, free Maxwell theory, the action doesn't even change. Like, I don't need to do anything to do it, to it. Okay, so I can map everything to this cylinder. And what that means for the Minkowski space-time is that I've basically wrapped the Penrose diagram onto this cylinder. Now, why do we want to do this? Well, this is actually going to give me a nice path integral argument to relate the different vacua. So we know from ordinary QFT that if, say, I wanted to know or obtain the vacuum state on this initial time slice of Minkowski theory, then what I need to do is a Euclidean path integral. So if this is Lorentzian time, then this is Euclidean time. And I do this path integral all the way from negative infinite Euclidean time. So let me be a bit more precise about this. What this is calculating is something like this, where this psi is setting boundary conditions on this initial time slice. I can do the same thing for the Einstein static universe. So if I wanted to calculate this inner product, where now this is the Einstein static vacua, then again, if this is Lorentzian Einstein static time, I want to do the path integral over this Euclidean region. Where this psi is setting boundary conditions here. Now, Now the point is that this lower half plane can be mapped conformally to this lower half cylinder. And if that's not quite so clear, maybe I'll do this intermediate step. Right, so okay, I guess I'll have to erase some things now. Right, so the intermediate step is to first map both of these things to a sphere, or a hemisphere, I should say. And if I do this, what happens is this, this negatively infinite time actually becomes a point. And similarly for this surface at infinite negative Einstein static time comes a point here. So I do this path integral over this lower hemisphere. I get a state here, and I can either glue it to my Einstein static universe, or I can glue it to my Minkowski spacetime, like so.
Is this system doing a Euclidean cylinder?
So this part is Euclidean, and the up here is Lorentzian. Sorry, what is the Euclidean? Sorry, say that really slow.
I replace that bottom part with a Euclidean cylinder.
Yeah, that's exactly this thing. So I'm just saying this thing can be mapped to this half sphere. Okay. So what we learn is actually that these two vacua are the same because they can be conformally mapped to each other. And actually from this picture, we can also learn a bit about what this vacuum looks like from the point of this Milne patch. And the way we do this is we kind of cut out this section of the cylinder. And you can do this because the vacuum is invariant under Einstein static time translation. So if I cut that out, the picture I get is now, okay, let me draw this bigger. It's now something like this. And let me just write exactly what I'm calculating here. So what this path integral is doing is it's again preparing this vacuum state, which is common to both the Minkowski theory and the Einstein static theory. And if I set some boundary conditions here, then this is taking the inner product of my Minkowski vacuum with these states. So that's what this is calculating. And I guess at this point I should say it's quite natural to think that there's another Milne patch on the other side.
So just so, in the first case, you want to prepare the vacuum at t equals zero, and then in this case, you're like basically shifting up by a certain amount on the
exactly
cylinder. And what's the But like the space time you're interested in is still, you're thinking of it as only one half of it, right? It's like the point gray patch is still like the R region for you.
Yeah, exactly. But it will be helpful to also introduce this region outside. Yeah.
Here's another question. So this horizontal line here, like what does it look like in flat space?
Like this horizontal line?
Yes. Is it like a voloid, like the ones you were drawing?
So it's cutting it like this, and it's actually extending outside as well.
But it's an hyperboloid.
Yeah.
It's a hyperboloid here, and it's glued also to a something that's conformal to a hyperboloid outside as well. Okay. Next, what I want to do is go from this picture to a formula. And to do this, what I observe is that this hemisphere has a local rotation symmetry. That is kind of like the Euclidean version of Milne time translation. So I can think of this as calculating a matrix element. And I should say, so this here is at I tau equals minus pi, and this here is at tau equals zero. So just to say in words what I'm doing, I'm saying that I can view this as taking this phi prime state, and this path integral is giving me an evolution in Euclidean Milne time. And so this is the evolution operator, and finally I contract it with this state on the right here. And okay, I'm running out of time, so maybe I shouldn't even point out.
Just get 15 minutes for our interruptions.
Okay. Okay, so, right, the reason why I put tildes, okay, this tilde shouldn't be there, but the reason why I put tildes here is because when I, like here, I'm secretly interpreting this phi prime state as a state on the right. And to do this, I need to do this Euclidean kind of rotation by pi. And that's kind of like a CPT operation. So that twiddle kind of means apply a CPT transformation. OK, now what I want to do is get this into the form I had on the left so I can read off what the vacuum is. The claim is that this thing is equal to equal to this thing. And you can check this by considering the case where these phi and phi primes are energy eigenstates. And you can see that in that case, what this is doing is it's picking out the term in this sum where phi prime and phi are both equal to ei. And so you get e to the minus pi e tau. And the same thing happens if you look at what happens if you take phi and phi prime to be energy eigenstates in this formula up there. Okay, so and finally what I want to do is put tildes on the left states. I can do that like so. And this is what we read off as the vacuum. And this state actually has a name. It's called the thermofield double state on left and right. Oh, sorry. Let me write this somewhere else as well. This is actually proportional too, because you kind of need to normalize this as well. So what we learn is that the Minkowski vacuum from the point of view of this Milne universe looks thermal. And what I want to do now is translate that into the language of conformal primary wave functions so that we can finally relate it to celestial holography if I have time.
You did all of this just to do the Milne thing, because it's kind of cute. You're basically trying to purify any state in the, like, in the 4D book using like a image of the Einstein cylinder, right? Like, you can do more with this than what you're going to say if it's just really for the Milne batch.
Yeah, like I can, this will, like I can run this argument also if I wanted to consider Rindler patches, and in
or
fact,
you just want to look at different U cuts, right? Because you just,
yeah, exactly. I can also move this picture up and down. And in fact, shifting it down will turn this Milne patch into a Rindler patch. And that's why, that's like another argument for seeing how this Milne patch is, or from the perspective of this Milne patch, the Minkowski vacuum is thermal.
No, yeah, I thought you would try to like look at like, say, some Prusa-Ratz result with like how things depend on you as like effectively like the, you're moving from something where it's like two halves of the circle to basically pinching off one of the other side.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, you can do that too, but I think that would just be somehow conformally related to this case.
Yeah, right, but I'm saying I feel like there's fun things you could just say from this picture that would be simpler to say than the way that he's doing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right, so now I want to talk about this state from, or using conformal primary wave functions. And the whole idea is that these conformal primary wave functions also give you a nice basis of states for this R patch, as well as for this L patch here. So if you just restrict A delta to this region, then you get a nice basis of states, or nice basis of wave functions, and the same is true if you, I guess you have to pull it back and evolve it into this, and then restrict it to this. So now I can write a mode expansion. Say, if I told you to just write the mode expansion for the right state, then you would kind of write the following. Its Hermitian conjugate. So this is just for the right patch. And similarly, for the left patch, you have something that looks like Actually, I'll give these a different name. I'll call them B's. And this tilde kind of means apply a CPT transformation to the write modes. But in the language of celestial holography, you would call that just a shadow transformation. Okay, so okay, right, so this is for just the right patch, this is just for the left patch, but if I add them together, I should be able to get a complete set of wave functions that describes this, both this left and right patches. And since this covers a Cauchy slice on the Einstein static universe, I can actually think of this as giving me a complete set of wave functions for the Einstein static universe, yeah, and also for
the argument for the shadow thing here. So you're basically just, okay, so I'm used to a complete set of wave functions on the right-hand side, and now you're adding an image with your motivation of, I guess, the like the dimensions are, sorry. It's not obvious it's a shadow from what you're doing, right? Besides the weight being flipped because of some of the, like, the Rindler energies. Can you explain again how you're motivating this shadow?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically when you take a shadow, you're... Okay, so when I do a CPT, first of all, it goes from the right to the left because there's like spatial.
The shadow would be inversion, so I would roughly have like done like a, it's not clear that I would have like done exactly right.
So, okay, since you mentioned the words inversion, let me draw this picture. Here's my original Minkowski patch. Here's an inverse Minkowski patch.
It's like this guy, right? Sorry, I'm going to dominate you.
Okay, so here's the original Minkowski patch, and let's say I start with A delta, which lives on this original Minkowski patch. If I do an inversion transformation,
so you're definitely drawing the left and right, like you're drawing that.
Okay, I'm not sure quite what you meant, but if I do an inversion transformation, what that's effectively doing is viewing this guy from the perspective of this patch.
Sure, which you can just say is basically saying I'm taking like the origin and spatial infinity.
Exactly.
So you're doing that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But now notice that if the Milne patch up here is now my left patch.
Sure. Okay. So I guess I'm trying to understand if that statement is like an artifact of like you're describing the state at that particular time slice.
I'm not quite sure what you mean by that. Is it okay if I continue and then we can discuss later? Okay. Wait, so actually building off of this picture, I can expand my Minkowski conformal primary wave functions into left and right parts in the following way. So effectively, what this formula is saying is if I have A delta in this Minkowski patch, then I can restrict it, first of all, to R. And of course, it still looks like the conformal primary wave function. Additionally, I can evolve it forward anywhere along my Einstein static universe. In particular, I can evolve it into this left patch. And what it looks like then is a shadow of the conformal primary wave function.
Sure. So I would say, but you're doing, like, you're saying that just because you've actually looked at the space-time wave function, right?
Yeah. I've actually done, in our paper, we actually do the inversion transformation.
Like, you can actually do the inversion and show the, like from,
Yeah, in our paper, we actually do exactly that. Instead of doing this path integral argument, we derive this formula from the inversion transformation. And then what we say is we can compare this with the mode expansion that I wrote down earlier, And in doing so, I can relate these B's to the A's. And that's the Bogoliubov transformation. So in the interest of time, I won't write down the full thing, but basically it looks something like this. So this is for lambda positive and lambda negative. It's something very similar. Oh wait, no, this is minus and this is. The point I'm trying to make is that a Minkowski annihilation operator does not correspond exactly to just a set of annihilation operators for the Milne spacetime, but rather it has this creation piece. So that's just another statement that of the fact that we what we learned here, which is that the Minkowski vacuum is not the Milne vacuum. Now, actually, because, okay, something I should have said at the beginning is that one of the nice things about these conformal primary wave functions is that this lambda doubles as the eigenfunction under Milne time translation. So because of that, we can actually write this thermofield double state in a nice way.
Push a little bit. I think that you wouldn't have that shadow relation if it weren't for that particular choice of time slice where you have like left and right wedges of the same size sort of thing. It's not obvious, but would you agree with that, or am I not?
Like, are you asking if like I take like, this tiny diamond and a huge diamond up there.
Right, yeah, I think the shadow, sorry, so like if I wanted to do a different time slice, right, so say I'm looking at something here, mm-hmm. right, then I would basically want to do something that maps this point to this point roughly so that the light cones are.
Yeah, I agree. Then,
that's not
then you don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, fine.
Okay.
Now we only have 5 minutes left, so let's.
Oh, okay. Let me go through this last part really quickly then. The whole point is that I can write this Minkowski vacuum, which is a thermofield double in left and right in a nice way in terms of those B operators that I just introduced. By acting with this entangling operator on the left and right vacuum. This entangling operator looks something like this. And it's actually quite easy to see that this gives you the thermofield double because this is the factor that appears in it. And when you exponentiate it, basically what you're doing is you're creating excitation or equal excitations in left and right, except this left part has a shadow on it. Okay. Now, finally, I need to relate this to celestial holography. So, right, recall we said that this right patch may have its own dual CFT, and analogously, what I want to say is that this left hatch also has its own CFT dual. And what I want to do is join these theories in such a way that describes this entanglement. And the strategy is to apply or turn these into basically conformal primary wave functions. So. Yeah, so basically I'm just going to replace these B's by O's. So let me just write that statement down in formulas. So I want to turn this into this case, which I'll just denote with no superscript. And what I want to do is what I want to have is this CFT be calculating these inner products in the Minkowski vacuum rather than the Milne vacuum. And what we learned is that these vacua are related by this. So I should put a plus here. Like so. And finally, if I just apply the holographic dictionary again.
Did you commute something across something else?
Yes, because now I'm in the CFT, so it's the same reason why in like CFT it.
But is there an actual local operator that defines that corresponds to this EI?
Yeah, so basically I just reinterpret these guys. Or this should
yeah,
be
kind of shifting an integral product of local.
Yeah.
That's the formation of the theory.
So basically what I want to do is interpret this as an interaction between the two CFTs.
Yes.
And that's kind of I guess the takeaway from this talk is that
I guess I want to add it outside of the collection functions, right? Yes. It's an interaction indeed.
Okay.
But one thing I'd be bothered by is I think it would matter where like those operators are physically in that space time, right? If you're talking about like originally the time like, or not like right. Like for example, like I would have thought before this that okay, in the picture you would have you prepare like you'd normally be preparing the states in the like ray patch here with operators smeared along generators of scry, not mm-hmm. just that like one of the origins.
Yep.
And then the inversion image is saying like you want to prepare the shadow states.
Yep.
Here. And so now, like, yep. If you want to talk about it, you have like this correlation function of like operators that are definitely not like unambiguously time ordered or anything like that, right?
Yeah. So again, I think it's a question of just the picture. So if this is the right patch, I think what you want me to draw is like, you know, something that propagates in like this, rather than just, I guess the picture I would have drawn was.
You just had an operator at that corner, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so I think this picture would make you happier.
Yeah, well, like, I think I would say that they're like, yeah, the operators could be supported like mm-hmm. here and then here and maybe smear their shadow.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so in the negative 4 minutes I have, I'll just say that the takeaway from this talk is that space-time entanglement is described in celestial CFT through these interaction terms. And these interaction terms basically create correlations in a CFT which are interpreted from the space-time perspective as entanglement. I think I should end there.
Is a statement that is somewhat analogous to something in the DSFT?
Well, it's kind of analogous to this subregion duality, but it's quite different in the sense that in this duality, I have a region dual to a region.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas in this case here, you know, the space-time region I'm considering already runs along the entirety of S2, so it can't be that the entanglement or this region is described by some subregion of my CFT. And what we kind of learn is that it's sort of described by, in a sense, by this parameter delta, the conformal dimension, and that's how you sort of, okay, I erased it already, but basically that's how you split the left. From the right.
I think we need to ask questions from anybody who wants to leave right now and is being held captive. Okay, then I will. So, no, but I feel like you could have tried to do the same thing in ADS-CFD, and the problem you would normally run into is that, like, say I just did like some Rindler wedge, it would really only hit one generator of scry. You have a very funny picture of, it's not obvious to me that the question you're answering is the same question you're drawing when you're drawing that ADS picture. Like, you're asking a different question, I would say. Like are you, like, would you extend this to want to look at different cuts of you and then try to compare, like, I haven't asked a well-posed question, maybe, but what I'm saying is that I think you could still try to push something closer to that if you wanted to, or you could try to do what Zubrot and friends are doing, which is talk about like what the information you lose is you change like U from negative infinity up to positive infinity, and map that in your picture to this, instead of being at this very particular, mm-hmm. I guess, whatever, is it pi over 2 or pi, I'm going to forget the Einstein cylinder evolution from that t equals 0 state, you could have like shifted that up and down.
Yep.
And then. But you could have tried to ask questions about regions of scry that weren't the full S2, right?
Yep, I could have.
Yeah. We didn't answer.
But I suspect that the answer I'll get there is kind of just more of a repeat of this, which is kind of like.
Maybe, no, but I think, I mean, maybe Jackie is doing this. I don't know what her project exactly is, but. It's subtle because, right, like, if you think of that conformal boundary story, like, you want it to be a region of our conformal boundary, not, like, a region of, your, say, like, the Poincaré patch on the boundary of the cylinder. So I think the naive thing is it's very, like, it looks like that only near spatial infinity, and then out near scry, it, like, everything is just, like, one generator of scry.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I don't think it would naively be a repeat. I think it would be subtle, but...
question.
I see your question.
So if that, I would imagine doing something like, you know, trace over an L to get a density matrix over an R or something like that. We're talking about entanglement.
Yeah.
Is there a safety meaning to that?
I guess what you would be doing is, like, that entanglement would just be measuring the correlations that are introduced by this. So what you would be saying is, I want to trace out all the left operators. And if you do that, you kind of get a, it would be like some ensemble average over the right CFT.
Okay.